20th, we always send out two letters regarding the conference to various churches. We sent the first one out a couple weeks ago and getting a response already, so we're expecting good things. I'd like to turn to 1 Kings chapter 17. I'm going to read verses 8 through verse 16. This is a chapter that we've preached many messages from. Really, we could spend a year here, but read verse 8 through 16. And the word of the Lord came unto him, that would be Elijah, saying, Arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, which is the same as Sidon in the New Testament, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. So he arose and went to Zarephath. When he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there, gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, Fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel, that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, Bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. And she said, As the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. And Elijah said unto her, Fear not, go and do as thou said. But make me thereof a little cake first, and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, The barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail, until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah. And she and he and her house did eat many days. And the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by Elijah. This, of course, is the account of Elijah arriving in the Gentile city of Zarephath. There he, as God said he would, he encounters a widow woman, and we read of how God miraculously protected and provided for Elijah, for this widow woman, and for her son. But to form the thought of the message, I want to call your attention to some words and phrases. In verse 10, notice gathering of sticks. And then here Elijah requests a little water. And then in verse 11, a morsel, which is a mouthful of bread. And then in verse 12, hear the widow say, I have not a cake. I have not, but a handful. I have not but a handful, and a little oil. In light of this, hear what God says in verse 14. The barrel of meal shall not waste or dissipate, neither shall the cruse of oil fail or run out. God had something more for them. We read in verse 15, and she and he and her house did eat many days. From gathering of sticks, from a little water, from a morsel of bread, from I have not, from a handful, from a little, the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail. God had something more for them. And what God had was inexhaustible. And that is our subject this morning, something more. First of all, we want to just look at the setting of this entire account. Consider the time, consider the circumstances. The chapter opens with Elijah appearing on the scene. It's the first time that we read of Elijah. Yet the account that we just read does not really begin with Elijah. It begins with King Ahab and his wife, Jezebel. You see, Ahab and Jezebel are the prototypical evil rulers of the Old Testament. Ahab begins his reign back in 1 Kings 16 and verse 29. He was the seventh king in a succession of wicked kings over the northern kingdom of Israel. You see, the nation of Israel had worshipped Jehovah, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the God who led them from Egyptian captivity, the God who provided leaders like Moses and Joshua and Samuel and David. But when the kingdom was divided, the northern kingdom of Israel grievously and flagrantly departed from God. And now they're in a very deplorable spiritual state. Looking at the northern kingdom of Israel, we see basically the decadent results of a people who have turned away from the absolutes of God to the things of the world. When Ahab became king, things were already in a critical state. It was a very critical time for the kingdom of Israel. Leading up to the reign of Ahab, the northern kingdom of Israel had mixed the worship of Jehovah with the worship of other gods, particularly Baal. To Ahab's way of thinking, much like his grandfather and his father, there was really nothing wrong with Jehovah, the God of Israel. But you had to adapt to new realities. Nothing really wrong with God, but let's keep an open mind. There are new realities. That's pretty much Ahab's way of thinking. And certainly he saw that it would be nothing wrong with an agricultural god like Baal. Certainly an agricultural god like Baal couldn't hurt. So we'll have Jehovah, the true God, and we'll have this so-called agricultural God. As a kingdom, for national security purposes, Israel needed reliable allies. So Ahab would marry Jezebel. 1 Kings 16, verse 31. She was a princess of Zidon, a Phoenician city. They were descendants of the Canaanites, and they worshipped the false god of Baal. Now, this marriage between Ahab and Jezebel, Ahab was quite the politician. And the marriage really was more about politics than it was romance. And politically, it was a very shrewd move by Ahab. It cemented ties between the two countries, the northern kingdom of Israel and Zarephath or Zidon, which gave Israel access to the prosperous port cities of Tyre and Sidon. And at the same time, it gave the Phoenicians control of trade routes to Egypt. So both countries benefited. So the marriage takes place, and Jezebel moves to Israel. And when she did, she brought her priests and her idols and her pagan worship practices with her. You see, Baal was, again, the Canaanite god associated with agriculture and fertility. And integral to Baal worship was the participants would cut themselves with knives. We see this in 1 Kings chapter 18. And they would also participate in sexual immorality and deviation. Adults would gather around the altars of Baal. Sexual orgies would take place, and the whole ritual was intended to produce prosperity by prompting Baal to bring rain for the fertility of Mother Earth. That was the practice of Baal worship. In Baal worship was pantheism, which simply places the creature above the creator. May I say, Baal worship is not dead. It's very much alive today, but that's not the message. And we read in 1 Kings 16, 31 and 33 that Ahab began to build altars to Baal. At first, it might appear that Ahab and Jezebel were content, and perhaps Ahab was, but Jezebel never was, content with religious pluralism. That is, we're giving Israel a choice. Nothing wrong with giving people choices. We give Israel a choice. They can serve God, or they can serve Baal. And it really doesn't matter to us who they serve. They just can do as they please. That might have been the thought process of Ahab. That was never the thought process of Jezebel. Because Jezebel was intolerable of the worship of God. So much so that she wanted it eliminated. Again, the spirit of Baal is not dead. Very much alive today. So she begins to systematically kill the prophets of God. And Baal worship would become so widespread that there really was no longer a public recognition of God. And God was openly mocked and defied by Baal worshipers. Once again, that spirit is not dead. We also see from chapter 16, verse 34, that during this time, the walls of Jericho were rebuilt during the reign of Ahab. The very act that God placed a curse upon. God said, if any man rebuild this city or these walls, he'll be cursed. So it was a time of reestablishing what God had cursed, what God had destroyed. They were reestablishing. So from all of this, we see it was a time of widespread godlessness, a time of ungodliness, a time of wickedness and vileness. It was a time of hatred and persecution. It was a time of antagonism. It was a time of shame. It was a time of abomination. Corruption was everywhere. Heresy was everywhere. Apostasy was everywhere. And the very foundations of a sane society were all but gone. This was the circumstances of the time. It was a time of malice. It was a time of animosity and disgust toward God and the things of God. And it was during this time that Elijah comes on the scene. Chapter 17 and verse 1. And the first thing he does is he speaks to Ahab and he pronounces a curse upon the land. He says there will be no rain, there will be no dew. Turned out that it would be for 3.5 years. No rain, no dew for 3.5 years. In other words, there would be a famine. Now remember, Baal is the so-called agricultural god. So God is not just randomly sending a drought to punish Ahab. What he's doing here, he's saying, you depend on Baal for your rain. That's basically what God's telling him. You think he's the god of rain? You go ahead and depend on him. What was he doing? He was leaving them to themselves. Still doing the same thing today. So we come to our text. There has been no dew. There has been no rain. So obviously it's time of great dryness. Crops had died in the fields. The vines and the trees had withered. That which had been beautiful and abundant was now desolate. It was a time when many of the rivers and brooks and wells have dried up, and many were still drying up. It was a time with widespread ruin and destitution. No doubt a time of loss. No doubt a time of emptiness and poverty. You want to talk about inconvenience? This was a time of great inconvenience. It was a time of affliction. It was a time of hunger. There was restlessness. There was sorrow. No doubt many people had died. It was a time of heartache. People were struggling. It was a time of helplessness. It was a time of hopelessness. People would go out every day, look in the sky to see some sign of rain. There was none. Wake up in the morning hoping to see just a little bit of dew. But there is none. It was a time of gloom. It was a time of misery. It was a time of death. It was a time of futility. They were in a great dilemma. And it was a time of urgent crisis. So that gives us an idea of the times and the circumstances. And then God tells Elijah to go to Zarephath. We read in verse 10 that he went to Zarephath. We're informed in verse 9 that Zarephath was part of Zidon, which was the place where wicked and intolerant Jezebel was from. And it is the place where her father is the king. Zidon was the center of Baal worship. And God tells Elijah, I want you to go to Zarephath, belonging to Zidon. So as you look upon the setting of our text, we see that it very much mirrors the day in which we live. The wicked spirit of Ahab and Jezebel is very prevalent today. As is the spirit of Baal worship. Very prevalent today. And our times are no less desperate than they were in the times of Ahab and Jezebel, than they were in the city of Zarephath. But you know what? God has something more for his people. And that brings us to that point. God has something more. So God instructs Elijah in verse 9, get thee to Zarephath. He gives him a promise. He said, I've commanded a widow woman there in Zarephath, to sustain thee. Now it's possible. All he said was, I've commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. Perhaps Elijah thought, well, she must be rich. God didn't say, I have commanded a poor, poverty-stricken widow woman to sustain thee. He just said, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain me. So what God is saying to Elijah is, in this time of great wickedness and famine, Elijah, I have something more for you. I'm going to continue to sustain thee. We read in verse 10, so he arose and went to Zarephath. And upon his arrival in this wicked place of Zarephath, he comes upon a very sad and pitiful scene. There's a widow woman, a single mother, who has come basically to the end of her resources. She's gathering sticks. As you read on, she's gathering two sticks. She didn't need many. She just needed a little fire. She's gathering sticks. A very menial task. If this woman was wealthy, she wouldn't be gathering sticks. One of her servants would be. So a very menial task, a picture of the routine. But God is saying, as Elijah sees this woman gathering sticks, God is saying to Elijah, I have something more for you. I have something more. Elijah says to this widow woman, who's gathering sticks, fetch me a little water in a vessel that I may drink. Notice verse 11. And as she was going to fetch it, which is amazing in itself, he called to her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. And that is when she stopped and she turned back to Elijah and said, I have not. It's like she says, Mister, listen to me. I have not a cake. All I have is a handful of meal, cornmeal. And that's at home in a barrel. And all I have is a little oil in a jar. That's all I have. And then she goes on to say, I'm gathering these two sticks that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat our final meal and die. So she says, I'm going to cook one last meal with the little that I have, and that will only stave off temporarily death. So this is a picture of desperation. This is a picture of hopelessness. A picture of helplessness. It is a picture of death. But God is saying to Elijah, I have something more for thee. I'm sure that prior to what we've read here, has the drought continued, that this woman and her son would use very sparingly the little that they had until all that was left was a handful of meal and a little of oil. No doubt as the drought went on, though they were very careful not to waste the little that they had, they watched that meal, they watched that oil dwindle down to just a handful and a little in a jar. They could see what was happening for some time. And I'm sure that there were times when she would go out, walk the fields, searching for food, and return home with nothing. Perhaps she would occasionally go to the neighbors and ask if she could borrow something. But every time she would return home with nothing. Perhaps she would go out every day and look for a sign, any sign of rain. But there was none. Day after day, week after week, month after month, nothing. Imagine she felt overwhelming grief and heartache. and tremendous burden and anguish of soul as she watched the little that they had dwindle down. And she would look at her son and think, what am I going to do? How am I going to feed him? And I'm sure there were many sleepless nights where she would lie there worrying. And here's Elijah. He arrives at the gate of the city. And there's this poor widow woman, and she's gathering sticks. And Elijah gives a command, fetch me a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she's going to do so, he says for her, bring me a morsel of bread in thine hand. And again, she stops and she turns toward him and says, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil of a cruse. Followed by those heartbreaking words, I'm gathering these two sticks so we can eat our last meal. And then in verse 13, here's what Elijah says. He says, okay, that's fine. But make me a meal first. You do what you got to do, but make me a meal first. And right after that, he gives this promise of God, that the little she had would not fail. And so she went and did what Elijah told her to do. You see, God, in the midst of a desperate situation, had something more. He always does. He always does. They had something inexhaustible, even in a time of drought and famine. Every single day, there was cornmeal in that barrel. And every single day, there was oil in that jar. How much? Enough to suffice Elijah, herself, and her son. It was not anywhere else. Every day it was in that barrel. Every day was in that little jar. What they needed was not in the cupboards. The cupboards were empty. She could go to those cupboards every single day. And every single day, the cupboards were empty. What they needed was not in the cupboards. What they needed was not in the streets. The streets were filled with death. What they needed was not in the fields. The fields were barren. What they needed was not in the ground. It was dust. No, if they wanted to, if they were so foolish, they could go out every day and spend all day looking for what they needed. But every single day, they would have returned home. Tired, worn out, and empty. They could, if they wanted to, have searched the fields. And they would have every day come home weak and hungry. You see, outside of that house, outside of that barrel, outside of that oil, was disappointment. That's all there was. There was dissatisfaction. But God had something more. God had something that would strengthen, that would satisfy and sustain this widow woman, Elijah, and her son. And every single day, there was meal in that barrel. And I don't believe that the barrel was overflowing with meal every single day. Every single day, there was what they needed for that day in that barrel. And so it was with the oil. No matter what a day brought forth, perhaps they were more needful one day than another. Perhaps they were more hungry one day than another. But it didn't matter. Whatever a day brought forth, every single day, there was meal in that barrel, and there was oil in that jar. And I don't believe it mattered what time of the day they went to the barrel. There was meal in that barrel. And I don't believe it mattered what time of day they went to that little jar. There was oil in that jar. Every single day, no matter what the time of the day. And every time they went to that barrel and jar, it was fresh supply. It wasn't left over. It was like God just put it there for that moment that they needed it. Without a doubt, I'm sure the first few days that they went to that barrel, they thought, certainly there won't be anything there today. We ate it all yesterday. There it was. There it was. And after doing that enough times, they probably came a point where they would go to that barrel, they would go to that jar, and they would expect it to be there. That's a good place to be. They would have assurance. I don't know how it got there, but I know it'll be there. They never went away empty. Without a doubt, they went to that barrel after they did this a few times, probably many times, knowing human nature. They did so with great joy. And they did so with thankful hearts. And as they reached down in that barrel and took a little meal, and then they'd go over to the oil, build the fire, and cook, there was great humility, realizing that they were not worthy of such a blessing. So this widow, her son, and Elijah, all around them is emptiness. All around them is dissatisfaction. All around them is disappointment. But God had something more. And that is true of you and I as well. Which brings us to the application to ourselves. Here we are, living in a day, much like the time of Elijah, the very foundations of sane society are being systematically destroyed. And people have turned away from the moral absolutes of God. And in place of the moral absolutes of God, they have turned to the relativism of humanism, which has an evolutional foundation, so it's wicked from its beginning. And the result of all of this is that we are being inundated by the spirit of Ahab, which is the adaptation to a new reality. How many times do you hear people say that? Well, things aren't like they used to be. This is a new century. What they're saying is, to put it in plain English, we have to adapt to a new reality. That was basically the spirit of Ahab, thinking that mixing that which is sinful with that which of God, what's it going to hurt? Well, look around. And you can pretty much answer that question. And the spirit of Jezebel, which is intolerance, absolute hatred. I mean, turn on the news. Watch these politicians. Absolute intolerance. Absolute hatred toward God. Relentless in their determination to extinguish the ways of God. It's all around us. And then there's the spirit of Baal worship, a lifestyle of destruction. And by the way, the Baal worshipers would sacrifice their children into the fires as well. Now, people aren't sacrificing their children in the fire, but they're sacrificing their children at the altars. of Baal, a lifestyle of destruction and vileness, a lifestyle of perversion. And it all results in corruption and heresy. And now the masses live under the cloud and weight of filth and vileness. The masses live in bondage, in blindness and darkness and ignorance. All this world is so ignorant. So ignorant. And the masses live in the bondage of ignorance. But we hear God say, you don't have to live that way. I believe God says this to all of His people. You don't have to live that way. You don't have to live on that level. I have something more. I have something better for you. So here we are in a day of spiritual famine. Devastation is everywhere. Barrenness is everywhere. Emptiness is everywhere. In which confession of sin, prayer, and fellowship with God, dying to self, and yielding and surrendering to God, and worship and praise to God is all but withered away. It's very rare. These are rare things. These are not plenteous things. And the masses live under the cloud and weight of emptiness. They live under the cloud and weight of dissatisfaction and disappointment. They live under the cloud of anxiety and fear. But we hear God say, you don't have to live on that level. Though the masses are, you don't have to. And the reason you don't have to is because I have something more for you. Right now, in this wicked and spiritually famine-stricken world, there is a God-provided, abundant, exhaustless source of strength. You don't find it out there. You find it in the God-ordained place. There is an exhaustless source of peace and calm, assurance and courage, wisdom. Oh, how we need wisdom today. An exhaustless source of direction and instruction for the child of God. There is a source of power and light and healing and rest and fulfillment and victory for the child of God. We read, the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail. That surpasses human thought. That surpasses human comprehension. And right now, at this very moment, every single day, no matter what a day may bring forth, and no matter the time of the day, God has provided something that surpasses human thought, human comprehension. He has provided it in the infinite, almighty person of Himself. God Himself is an exhaustless supply. He has also provided it in the infallible, inerrant, inspired Word of God. Also a source of inexhaustible supply. He has also provided it in His enabling, manifold grace. So you see, we don't just have one barrel. We have the person of God. We have the Word of God. We have the grace of God. These are all barrels. And they're all available today. That's our source. Our source isn't out there. Our source of strength is not in politics. Our source of strength is not in circumstances. Our source, and it's inexhaustible, is in the person of God, who God is. And we can go to Him every single day and draw what we need. Our source is His Word and His grace. But you think about it, I mean, they couldn't draw from that barrel unless they got close to the barrel. They couldn't sit on one side of the room and expect it to walk over to them. They had to get up and they had to go over and reach down into that barrel. And if we want this abundant supply, you got to draw near to the source. And I'm not talking physically here, I'm talking spiritually. We have to draw near the source. Because there is one who knows your every circumstance, who knows your every care, your every burden, your every difficulty, your every problem, your every trial. He knows all your problems. You don't even know all your problems. You think you got problems? I got news for you. You got more than you think you do. And God knows every single one of them. He knows all your problems. He knows all your difficulties. He knows every temptation that you have now and every temptation that you will have. He knows your every battle. He knows your every obstacle. He knows your every doubt. He knows your every weakness. And we have more weaknesses than we're even aware of. He knows it all. He knows our every sin. And He says to each one of us, I have something more. I have something that is inexhaustible. I know what you need, and I have it. That is always so. Always so. The barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail. Draw near to God today and receive from Him. We that are saved, there's something more. It's in God. It's in His Word. It's in His grace. If you're here and unsaved, there is something more than the condemnation that you're under. There's something more. There's something better. There's something more than the spiritual death that you are in. You live your life now without Christ. But there's something more than life without Christ. It's in the Lord. There's something more than life alienated from God. There's something more than the emptiness. It's not out there. It's not in a church. And it's not in some religious performance or exercise. It's in a person. Jesus Christ. And if you come to Him, you will not be disappointed. You will not be dissatisfied. It's inexhaustible. No matter what the day is, no matter what the circumstances are, there is a source for everything that we need. That's true of you and I that are saved. That's true of you that are sitting here and are unsaved. God is the source. I'm so thankful that God provides us a source of what we need. We have a wonderful God. He's good. He's long-suffering. Now, I don't know. I don't think it happened. But we know human nature. here's what might have happened and what would happen in many cases. You go to that barrel of meal, and after 3 or 4 weeks of getting meal out, you begin to think, I'm getting a little tired of this meal. You know, God, I want something different here. And begin to murmur and to complain. Now, there's no record that that's what happened. But that's human nature. That's what the children of Israel did with the manna. God, you're just going to keep giving us this? You thank God for what He gives. We have a wonderful God. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.
538. 538.